This is The Guardian.
Hi, everybody. It's Max here. Just to let you know that Nuno Espirito Santo was fired while we were recording, right at the end of the pod. So we react to that at the end, although we kind of expected it to happen while we discuss Spurs and Manchester United. It's a bit longer than normal, but I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. So much to discuss. All aboard the Patrick Vieira Express as Crystal Palace win at City. We all predicted he'd be good. It's time up for Nuno. Does he know what he's doing? If he doesn't know what he's doing, then do the people above him know what they're doing, even if they sack him for not knowing what he's doing? Regardless, it all means that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gets another week. Why do we never talk about Brighton? A great comeback at Anfield for Graham Potter's charges. Meanwhile, have Chelsea sewn up the title? Are we all coming to terms with West Ham being good? Will we get some reasoned and well-thought-out views on Aston Villa? I'm looking at you, Jordan. Elsewhere, there's the best save of all time this week, forgetting injury time at Orient, Barry's old yogurt, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Morning, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Nice to see you. Jordan Jarrett-Bryan, hello.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. We learned that your dad is a superstar DJ. Who knew? Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello.
Isn't it? Yeah, so we've discovered that, Jordan, we've been hiring the wrong Jarrett Bryan. That's why
I could have told you that, but I'm getting paid, so I wasn't going to.
Getting all these ridiculous opinions. And his dad is DJing at Wembley. God, the thought of my dad DJing at Wembley is just too much. 82. Hello, everybody. Here's Wagner. Anyway, look, Spurs United was a huge game. There's lots to talk about with that, with Nuno and Solskjaer, etc. But it would be rude not to start at the Etihad. Mike says, as a long-time listener, I'm used to the disdain and indifference shown towards Crystal Palace. Perhaps you and your guests might want to alter your predictions of them getting relegated from a Palace fan on Vancouver Island. What a brilliant performance from Palace, Baz.
Yeah, it was a thoroughly deserved win. They haven't been getting the results their performances of late have deserved. They were possibly a little bit lucky with a couple of decisions in this game, but take the luck, as Patrick Vieira said, and they were well worth the win. I think it's a lot to do with the fact that they're no longer over-reliant on Wilfred Zaha. They've got Conor Gallagher, who's excellent. Michael Olise came on and was excellent. Some of their old stagers were also superb. And they still have Eberechi Eze waiting in the wings to come back from his injury, and he's arguably their best player. So very exciting times for Crystal Palace. I wasn't convinced that Patrick Vieira was a particularly shrewd appointment, and he is making me look an idiot.
I'm not going to say it's not difficult, but you know, others also didn't think Patrick Vieira would do well. Paul says, from one of the Beckenham cricket lads, would Wilson now like to reassess his pre-season view on Patrick Vieira's Palace?
Yes, I would. I thought they did a lot of intelligent things this summer. I just worried they'd done too much too quickly. But it seems to have changed. Vieira's gotten playing his way almost instantly. And I thought that interview with Zaha afterwards, when he talked about the way they're playing it out from the back and how much more comfortable he is with that, I thought that was really interesting. And as Barry says, the last four games they've drawn, or the previous four games they've drawn, and they probably should have won all of them as well. Conceded late, equalised against Arsenal, against Brighton, let in the two soft early goals against Leicester. They're absolutely flying at the minute, and they probably had a bit of luck in the bank.
And that's the impressive thing, Jordan, isn't it? That Vieira hasn't had a lot of time, and he's turned a team who haven't been playing a whole lot of football for the last few years into a team that, you know, they must feel so released on the training, right? They're like Zaha said afterwards, we keep the ball. Training must be so strange for them now.
Well, I hate to be the kind of smart ass, but I actually did predict that Vieira would
do
well this season.
I don't hate it at all.
I had them 10th in our preseason predictions, Max, only because I don't think he did as bad a job in America and in France as a lot of people made out he did. And I'm a big believer in trying new things and experimenting and learning lessons. It just felt like, for me, this was the right club at the right level of Premier League club at the right time for Vieira. And I think, as Barry says earlier on, when I watch Palace play now, they're in that zone of everybody is looking forward. Everyone wants to pass forward. Everyone wants to progress up the field. And he's got them doing that and playing that style of play relatively quickly. It could all come tumbling down very quickly, so I don't want to go too smug too early. But it was really, really, really good to see that they're not reliant anymore on solely Zaha. And as Wilson says, they should have beaten my lot Arsenal for sure. They were very unlucky to draw that game. So I'm expecting some really impressive things for Crystal Palace. And they're my local team, so they're my second team. So I'm quite happy they're doing well. But it's not a massive surprise to me. But I think what's key now is, can he keep this momentum going for as long as possible?
Alex says, in light of his recent rise, is Conor Gallagher a name that always has to be said in full? See Ian Wright's comments on Match of the Day. Full name used 7 times in about 3 minutes. Yeah, he joins, you know, the Benicophobe list of players that you have to use their entire... No, he's incredibly good, Baz, isn't he? I mean, we mentioned it before. I saw it at West Brom. I like to claim I saw him before he was famous. But he's got everything. And you wonder if he'll go back to Chelsea and start in that Chelsea team. And, you know, if he could even break into England.
I imagine he will play for England at some point, whether that's as a Chelsea player, a Palace player, or somebody, some other club's player. Remains to be seen. Hard to get into that Chelsea team and nail down a place. But I'm struggling to even remember him playing for West Brom, I must confess. But I've been hugely impressed with him.
Name 3 West Brom players.
Past or present.
Well, there was the time last season where I was at a loss to name any West Brom players. I just hadn't seen them play. So anyway, avoiding your question, Wilson, pointedly avoiding it. Yeah, he is terrific. He might fancy a move away from Chelsea. Who knows? But it would be hard to break into that Chelsea team, dislodge whoever's there ahead of him. I would be very surprised if he does not play for England.
We'll deal with, a bit like Match of the Day, we'll deal with all those last man challenges, the Laporte one in a, you know, I think when we do the Villa one, because that was the most fun last man, also including someone just being elbowed in the face a second before, we'll get to that. Man City, is this anything more than a blip, Wilson? Should we read more into this?
Well, I don't know. There's something a bit funny going on with City this season. It does seem very, very all or nothing, that they're completely capable of battering good teams by 5 or 6. But it sort of feels like if they don't score in the first half hour, they can get frustrated. So it happened against Southampton. They only drew at home. It happened the Community Shield against Leicester. Even against Chelsea, when they were really good, they only got 1 goal. They wasted a load of chances. So the banal question, I guess, to ask about is, do they need a striker? And you do think, actually, maybe sometimes the absence of a striker is felt. On the other hand, not having a striker, I think, lets them play with greater fluidity and greater fluency. So it's not that there's a right or a wrong there. It's just that there are times when you think, yeah, if they actually had a Ronaldo, for instance, to bring off a bench for half an hour to go, that might be quite useful for them.
Are you saying Ronaldo's a good signing, Wilson? That feels like it doesn't compute in everything you've been saying to me for the last 6 or 10 weeks.
All things are contingent. I think Ronaldo... I couldn't understand why City had an interest in Ronaldo. And it may be their interest was entirely in... he was a stalking horse to kind of destroy Manchester United. In which case, I admire the skullduggery of that immensely. But yeah, I spent quite a long time trying to work out what were they going to do with him. And the only thing I can think of that they were going to do was to use him as an impact sub, or maybe against weaker teams just to rack up cricket scores.
Let's go to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Tottenham 0, Manchester United 3. Spurs fans booed Nuno when he replaced Lucas Moura with Steven Bergwijn in the second half. Chances of you don't know what you're doing. The Telegraph, Matt Law on the Telegraph reporting that he could be sacked as Spurs manager, presumably about an hour after we finished doing this podcast. They failed to have a shot on target. They haven't had one since the first half of the West Ham game. That seems a slight issue, doesn't it? Joe says, should I keep letting Tottenham spoil my weekend for the rest of my life or just support West Ham instead? Neil says, what the hell are we going to do now? Sincerely, a Spurs fan. Wilson, you've written about the Spurs crisis, haven't you?
Yeah, I feel very sorry for Nuno, actually. I think he's not the cause of the problem. He's a symptom and probably will end up being a victim of it. That these are issues going back to the stadium move, that their budget was obviously compromised by that, that they weren't able to sign players in the way that the Pochettino wanted. But I think the other issue then, and this is something Pochettino said quite a lot, and it wasn't really picked up because I guess it's not the exciting bit of it, but he also wanted to sell players, that he was very aware players were going stale. And I think his style is quite intense and certain players will get burned out by that after 3 or 4 or 5 seasons. And I think I know that their style of football is very different, but they're sort of, their personalities, I think, have certain similarities. So I think the comparison is with Simeone at Atletico. What he's been really good at is selling players at the right time. And I guess in a sense, there's a similar stature of club. There's clearly wealthier clubs within that division, but they are, you know, a big club with aspirations. And if you sell at the right time, you can then buy them back 2 or 3 years later when they've sort of, those players have come to terms with what they were getting at your club. And that didn't happen. Now, whether that's to do with Levy and his negotiating style and trying to wring every last penny out of every deal, whether he was just distracted by the stadium move, whether the players didn't want to go, I don't know. You need people who are much closer to the club than me to know that. But the failure to move players on was at least as much of a problem as the failure to bring players in. And obviously those two things are related as well. So I just sort of feel there's been this sort of miasma of staleness settling over Tottenham, probably since before the Champions League final, although the Champions League final, you know, sort of covered it up. And there's then that decision to be made when the following season started badly, when 2019-20 started badly. Do you sack Pochettino, which is the quick and easy thing to do, or do you go through a long process of rebuilding and rejuvenating the squad? And that decision to get rid of Pochettino and replace him with Mourinho, I think in retrospect looked disastrous, and now it's been confirmed as disastrous.
In every respect, it looked ridiculous, yeah. Didn't it? It looked disastrous. A miasma of staleness overseen, Barry, by, you know, Nuno, the dying Jedi, medieval knight, gathering moss, fixing your car. I think I agree with Wilson. It isn't his fault, but I do think they'd probably be right to get rid of him. I don't know if it would fix anything, though.
It's, I suppose, a short-term solution to a very big problem. It's not his fault. He was clearly the wrong appointment. He wasn't anywhere near first choice for the job, and it's turned out it was basically a punt, and it hasn't worked out. But I think he deserves some opprobrium for his team selection on Saturday. It was a very conservative approach against a team that was more or less on its knees after that humiliation against Liverpool. And Tottenham probably should have torn into them, but, you know, that's not the style Nuno's team plays. But even so, it was a very conservative choice of players in midfield. And they were so cautious. It was as if both teams were terrified of conceding the first goal. And when Tottenham eventually did concede it, that was it. The jig was up for them. So in that regard, I think Nuno does deserve criticism for the selection and the tactics employed against Manchester United, a team that should have been there for the taking.
Just to reiterate Barry's point there, yeah, one of the things that I was surprised wasn't so much how unorganised they were because they were in poor form, but if you're Spurs, surely, bar Norwich, the one team you want to play this weekend is Manchester United. So whilst I can maybe forgive, you know, poor tactics and not being organised, what I can't forgive is them not being at least up for it. In that first 10 minutes, you want to test United and see how vulnerable and how, you know, what they have they been working on things in the week post the Liverpool massacre? A couple of things as well. First of all, I'm hearing a lot of talk about Dele Alli and this idea that, why can't Dele Alli get into this Spurs team? Why isn't Dele Alli playing? playing. People talk about Dele Alli as if he's been poor for like 6 months. It's like a run of form. He's not been good for nearly 3 years. People forget that he's not been good for almost 3 years. So this idea that maybe that he's in kind of some kind of poor run of form and he should be playing because, well, Lo Celso's playing, so why can't Alli play? And Ali's been bad for a very long time. And the second thing is to Jonathan's point regarding Pochettino, there's also a lot of rose tinted glasses around what happened back then. Mauricio Pochettino, whilst at the time I was quite surprised he was sacked, the year before when they got to the Champions League final, they weren't that good. That run kind of mastered the domestic form of the team. And even when he was sacked, they were a really, really, really bad point in terms of poor form. So this idea that, you know, oh, we shouldn't have sacked Pochettino, for me is a little bit weird, because at the time, the consensus, as I remember it, was, well, he's come to the end of his road, you know, they've not backed him. I think he's a really good manager. I really rate him. And I thought it was a little harsh, but at the time, there was kind of common agreement that actually it's running its course and he should go. So this idea that people are saying, oh, they shouldn't have sacked him, I find quite bizarre personally.
Well, I mean, I said at the time they shouldn't have sacked him. But it obviously was a problem that it had gone stale. And you know, that always happens when any manager is in a job for any length of time. And you either have to replace players or replace a manager. Mm. And the easy thing to do is to replace a manager, but that's disruptive. If you've got a manager who's really good, who's built your club up, then and he's telling you the players need replacing. And he's not saying, I need four players. He's saying, I need to sell these four. And I need to get four new ones in. He's not demanding enormous amounts of money. You know, it's not sort of like Conte at Chelsea or at Inter, where it was constantly more players, more players, more players. It was a realistic project of get rid of them, replace them. And I think, yeah, you're right that there was a sort of, there was a groundswell against him, but I sort of thought that was incredibly short-termist with somebody I think is an incredibly gifted manager at a bad club at the minute, at the wrong club at the minute for his gifts. And right. I hope he does get another chance at a club like Tottenham, or even Manchester United, where he has a chance to build something in his image rather than being constrained by the egos of superstars.
And Jordan said there that, with the exception of Norwich, Tottenham couldn't have handpicked better opposition than Manchester United on Saturday. But by the same token, Manchester United could not have handpicked better opposition.
True. You're absolutely right. Just before we go on to Manchester United, what do you do with Harry Kane, Wilson?
Go back to last summer, you sell him to Manchester City for £130 million.
Yeah, but you can't do that now. And I do think it's interesting. Hindsight's a wonderful thing.
I think it might be easier to do that than get a tune out of them, actually. it's always a question of where do you deploy your resources? So do you deploy the resources to getting new players, or do you build the time machine? I honestly don't know which one Levy's going to go for on pass record.
Daniel Levy going and Paratici going at 88 miles per hour with Harry Kane stuffed in the back of a DeLorean going, this is our only
hope. The problem is they're trying to do it on that Seven Sisters Road and they just can't go. In fact, they only have to go 12 miles an hour, but even that is beyond them.
Can I just very briefly add on Conte, there's loose reports leaking that they might be going back in for Conte. And I found it bizarre at the time that they didn't just go all in with Conte, because it's very, very rare a club like Spurs can get a manager of the caliber of Conte. So if they go back to him after taking a punt, as Barry says, on Espirito Santo, I find that quite weird. But yeah, I think now they're in a position where do Spurs go if they're going to sack their current manager?
Johnny says, after the panel danced on Solskjaer's managerial grave last week, has Ronaldo rolled away the stone? Ole said, it's been a very difficult week for the players, the club, the fans, for me. I've stayed away from most of the noise. He didn't add, not reading Jonathan Wilson's latest article about me, but I presume that's exactly what he meant. that Ronaldo finish, Baz, was something else. He hadn't done much in the game. I was watching it thinking, God, he's not doing much and Cavani's not doing much. And actually his finish was brilliant and Cavani turned out to have a great game.
Yeah, brilliant finish. It was a good cross as well. Ben Davis couldn't intercept it. And the manner in which Ronaldo pulled away from him and fired the ball home was, you know, outstanding technique. I did see Ben Davis getting a bit of criticism for that, for letting him peel away from him, which I thought was slightly harsh. I thought Ben Davis's only crime in that situation was not being another 2 inches tall, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I just sort of think he's not the fullback you need anymore. I obviously watching this in a very biased Tottenham way, I thought, you know, Skip and Hoiberg can't pass the ball in this specific moment. Yeah,
in
but
the
I
game.
Suspect the criticism is more, wow, Ben Davies is sort of still there, like he's an excellent pro, but I don't know. Like there are players we talked about, you know, Joel Ward at Palace, Cresswell at West Ham, players that other managers are getting tunes out of, but I think there's a lot of frustration from everyone at Spurs in that midfield. No one can pass the ball. Like Jorginho zipped a ball to Ziyech that was disallowed for Chelsea. There's no pass played with any pace forwards ever. Luke says, after the third goal, Martin Tyler says, the new show in town is Breathing Room, starring Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Who wants to see it? What does this mean now, Wilson? He's got another game, another week?
Yeah, he has. I don't think there's any urgency on the part of United board to get rid of him. I think they still want this to succeed. Partly, I think, because they don't really know what to do next. I think that set up with the back three and then two holding midfielders sitting just in front, I think that does look solid. And I think in the short term, that's fine. And you know, they played well enough on Saturday. And I thought Ronaldo and Cavani were both excellent at what they were asked to do. And I'm glad that Cavani's getting a game now, because I think one of the great sadnesses of the last few months has been sort of a waste of the end of his career, when I think he is a phenomenal centre forward, and I just want to see him play for as long as we can, because I think he's just a great forward. Can you do that long term? Can you play that sort of defensive style, and is that acceptable to United as a club? Other teams clearly won't be as accommodating to that as Spurs were. I think a lot of teams would look at that and think, well, they're not actually causing that much of a threat. We'll sit in and we'll take the 0-0. Thanks very much. And also, can you get away with having Greenwood, Rashford, Sancho, Pogba on the bench? And again, long term, I don't think you can.
Look, Manchester United go to Atalanta in the Champions League on Tuesday. Spurs are at home to Vitesse in the Europa Conference League on Thursday before going to Everton on Sunday. Good luck to Ryan Mason in all of those games. Let's go to Anfield. Liverpool 2, Brighton 2. John, not a question so much as a running order note. Max, quote, I suppose we should actually also talk about Brighton. David, after Brighton's well-deserved draw at Liverpool, will you now double the time you chat about Brighton to 30 seconds? Probably acceptable criticism. What did they do well?
It's all these people whining. How long do they want the show to be?
That's a good question. Let us know, because there's some debate in the office of whether it should be 45 minutes or an hour and 10. But, you know, like, at what point do you just switch us off and go and do something more interesting? What did Brighton do well? What is it that Graham Potter does, Jordan? Because they are incredibly impressive.
I think as I'm seeing it, he feels to me like a training ground manager that is almost anal and diligent in what he wants his teams to do come Saturday 3 p.m. And at the same time, though, instills a level of confidence that when they're on the ball, on the pitch, on a 3 p.m. at Saturday, they can express themselves and play progressive football. And I put progressive in inverted commas, because that depends on how you define progressive. But that feels to me like something that he works very, very hard in instilling players with the confidence to always try to go forward. I mentioned earlier on about Crystal Palace and what Vieira is doing there. Whenever I watch Palace, as I mentioned, they're always looking to pass forward first. I think it's a similar thing at Brighton. I'm actually quite surprised that, considering they didn't spend big on a striker this season, they're still doing as well as they're doing. Because last year, the main criticism of Brighton was that they play really good football, they good build-up play, but they just blunt up top, and they haven't really invested a lot of money in a striker this year up top to do that of note anyway. So I'm actually quite surprised they're doing really well. But he's someone that I think I mentioned the last time I was on the pods that is often been mentioned as a possible replacement for Arteta when he was doing poorly, or even Spurs. But I wonder if in the back of his head he's thinking to himself, well, Guardiola won't be there forever. If I stick it out for 18 more months, I wonder if I could put myself in the conversation for the Man City job if he continues on the current trajectory. So, to answer your question, I think they're about playing, you know, forward, free-flowing football that keeps the ball with players that are quite athletic and quite fit to be able to last as close to 90 minutes as possible.
Do you think, Wilson, it's easier? You look at Vieira getting a tune out of Palace and playing, you know, forward-thinking front foot football, and Potter doing it at Brighton, compared to, say, Solskjaer and Nuno not doing that with ostensibly better players, or on paper better players, is it easier to coach a team of smaller egos, or are they just better coaches, or are their players actually better? It just on paper they're not as good.
I think players with egos are a nightmare, and it obviously causes problems, and they're less likely to subjugate themselves to the system. But you've got to be a coach who wants to play in that system. So, Nuno, at Wolves, he wasn't playing front foot football. He was very successful, but it was a different style of football. Now, I do wonder, and yeah, this is talking in absurdly general terms, but I do wonder if that Vita Frage school of football, the tactical periodization, whether that now is slightly old hat, if that's had its day. There seems to be a lot of Portuguese coaches who play quite boring football, who don't quite go anywhere anymore. And the trendy place now seems to be Germany and that sort of Bundesliga school of pressing. But I think the other thing with Brighton specifically this week, because they had that little dip, is that Bissouma's back. He'd obviously had the issue where he was arrested in the nightclub, and I think he was bailed beginning of last month. But he had a knee problem as well, so he got some minutes in the League Cup midweek and then started on Saturday. So his return gives him much greater drive through midfield, and I think gives him a little bit of attacking edge. I still think they're a bit blunt, that they don't have a natural goal scorer there. But as I said about City, that's hang on, I'm mixing metaphors terribly here. That blunt edge can be a double-edged blunt edge.
It was interesting against Liverpool. They didn't actually play a striker. Neil Maupay was on the bench, and it was Leandro Trossard was, a false nine, and that caused Liverpool quite a lot of problems.
Yeah. Mwepu's goal, another big moment for our Zambian fans, who we've recently discovered, Barry, was so good, wasn't it? I mean, that is technique. It reminded me a bit of Letitia versus Blackburn without all the fancy footwork before it. Just the dip and the bend and everything. It was perfect.
Yeah, and just perfectly placed. Alisson spotted Alisson just not very far off his line, and a brilliant strike.
Just on the subject of Zambia, because you had Fashion Sakala scoring a hat-trick for Rangers at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Patson Daka as well. They haven't qualified for Cup of Nations. 24 teams in the Cup of Nations. Zambia, with those three players, haven't got there.
Who's their manager?
I don't know. Used to be Portfield.
Is it Hervé Renard? It must be one of Claude Lois and Hervé Renard. Anyway, whoever it is. Well, they'll probably be sacked by the end of this podcast. So then we'd have to re-record the whole thing.
Oh, it's a caretaker coach.
Oh, who is
Beston,
it?
Beston Chambeshi, who played for Zambia in the Olympics in 88.
Right. So it's an emotional appointment, isn't it?
This is his second stint as caretaker after a brief one in 2018. Oh, right. I have no idea who he replaced.
Right. So he's sort of the permanent caretaker.
Yeah.
Right. What's that equivalent? Who's always being the caretaker?
There was that guy at Blackburn. What's his name?
Steve Keane.
What was he called?
Tony Parks.
Tony Parks.
Tony Parks.
Yes. He's the Tony Parks of Zambia. A wonderful place to end part one. And we'll start part two at St. James's Park. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now, COP26, the UN conference on climate change, will be taking place over the next 2 weeks. The Science Weekly podcast is in Glasgow and will be taking listeners inside this critical climate conference. Each weekday, host Madeleine Finlay will be joined by the Guardian's award-winning environment team as they report on the most critical climate meeting to ever take place. To stay across all the latest developments, make sure you subscribe to the Science Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. On to potentially less important things for the future of the planet. Newcastle 0, Chelsea 3. Newcastle remain without a league victory this season, 19th in the table, their first home match for Newcastle since Steve Bruce left the club. Baz, you were slightly taken by the Newcastle performance.
Well, it was bad. I didn't expect them to beat Chelsea. I didn't expect them to get a result, but I was just agog at the badness of their performance. It's their second game after Steve Bruce has left. Nothing has changed. They're still going about the same lineup, the same formation, the same defeatist approach. You've players like Sean Longstaff, Jamal Lascelles, Matt Ritchie in the team who just don't look good enough to be playing Premier League football at the moment. And you've better players than them on the bench who aren't getting a look in. And I find it a bit odd that the team was completely unchanged from their lucky draw, very lucky draw against Crystal Palace. And they were bad in that game too. So it just seemed baffling that you wouldn't make any changes. I know Graham Jones has been sort of given a hospital pass. He's stuck with the same players that were there when Steve Bruce was in charge. But he doesn't seem to have done anything to try and, a phrase we've used at length already, get a tune out of them. They're just sleepwalking their way to bad results.
And I know we've said it already, but it is totally fascinating, this dynamic, Jordan, of this these players who probably aren't going to be there for long, trying to get points for a manager who isn't there yet, for players who aren't there yet in January. And they could be, I mean, they're not going to be adrift because Norwich, but they could be adrift with Norwich. It's very, if you look at their fixtures, it's hard to see how many points they're going to get before the window opens.
I don't see many, Max. And if you're a Newcastle fan, you must be going through this kind of massive internal conflict of one side of your body is just joyous because you know you're the richest club in the world, but the other half is having to come to the realization that you probably will be going down this season. You'll be the richest club in the second tier of English football. And I don't know which side of your body really, the emotion is strong at the moment. I've said for a while now, Max, this is a championship squad. It's a championship. I don't see many good players in Premier League level players in that squad. So where they are is not a surprise to me. I don't know if you saw the pictures of Steve Bruce yesterday at the cricket. He was at the cricket yesterday with his son. Looking really, really, really good already. He's like releasing himself of the Newcastle story. Just takes years off your life. I think they will go down this year. And I think getting limp into January, where they definitely want to try and bring in some better players, I'm not so sure that's even going to be enough, enough if and when they do that then. So they're in big, big problems.
Yeah, and also fascinating to know who's going to go. You know, what level of footballer are you going to get to come in January? The whole thing is totally fascinating.
Well, presumably, they'll be relying on loans, and there will be good players available who, for whatever reason, are not getting in their current team.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And will be willing to go there for 6 months. But it's not, at the moment, it's not going to look a particularly inviting proposition. I do think they need to appoint a manager very quickly.
I wonder if their approach is, let's get someone in ASAP to keep us in the Premier League, or no, let's not rush this. Let's get the guy we want that's going to hopefully get us in the top six within the next couple of years. I'm interested to see their approach, because I think before we talk about players that are going to go there, they need to, as Barry says, they need to get the manager in first.
Allardyce, I mean, that would just be, like, you'll talk about which part of the Newcastle fans' body they're wrestling with. Human rights over here, all the money over here, their left leg's going, we're going down, and then the right half's got, do we need Big Sam here? The whole thing is...
I mean, it's not even clear who's making the decision set at the minute. There seems to be three factions on the board. There's the Rubens, the Staveleys, and then the Saudis. And it seems that it's not entirely clear who's running it. So, I mean, that's why it took so long to get rid of Bruce. And that's the easy bit. Getting in somebody new is obviously harder than getting rid of the bloke who's already there. You have a 6 point adrift already. And Chelsea are the first sort of big, big team they've played so far. You know, they've got a run in December, I think, where they play Leicester, Liverpool, City, United.
Before that, they've got Brighton, Brentford, Arsenal, Norwich. So that, you know,
Brighton, Brentford aren't easy, you know. And
No, neither Arsenal either.
You're right, easy.
Yeah, right. Sean says, do Chelsea even need a striker with the goal scoring form of their wing backs? Reece James, both those finishes, Barry, were so good.
Absolutely splendid finishes. One with the left, one with the right. I mean, he was given the freedom of the park, but still, sublime finishing. And there was some stat I saw, I think it was a Match of the Day, that Chelsea's defenders are scoring way more goals than their strikers. And I suppose as long as they're going in, it doesn't matter who's getting them.
I think on the weekend, a weekend of really good goals generally in the Premier League, that first Reece James goal, I think, was the best. I think it's a phenomenal, A's on his left foot, but he's got it. That is definition of top bins. That is right in the top corner, and he's hit it true. I think that was my favourite goal of the weekend for sure.
Let's go to the King Power. Leicester nil, Arsenal 2. Matt said, should Aaron Ramsdale go to Glasgow to save the planet? Thomas, do you think Ramsdale would have caught the Maddison free kick if he had long sleeves on? Absolutely. Hugh, what was the Aaron Ramsdale save score on the Gordon Banks scale? Do you know what? I presume it would be the Gordon Banks barometer. I do wonder, what save should we judge all saves against Wilson? Tahir wanted to know this. You know, what's...
Well, I know what the answer to this is going to be.
The answer is, boringly, there are many different types of save. In the same way, okay, you don't judge all goals against Trevor Sinclair. You only judge a particular type of goal against Trevor Sinclair.
Okay.
So right, you have the longish range shot where you have to cover a lot of ground and fling yourself at it. You have the very quick reactions. You have double saves. So double saves, clearly, it's Jim Montgomery, 1973. If it's making ground across your goal to scoop away a back post header, it's Gordon Banks in 1970. If it's flapping away a ball that's at a comfortable height for you, then it's David Stephen against Paul Pesci's leader, which is massively overrated.
It's funny. I'm sure we've said it before, but Barry said exactly that.
No, I know. That's why I said it. Yes, I didn't even really mean it. I'm just trying to get Barry in trouble.
David Seaman texted the show going, thank you. But nice to know he's listening. Maybe he's listening to the pod. It's highly unlikely. Well, he's fishing on a lake. David Seaman's just there going, I wonder if they'll talk about that save from Paul Pesca-Salido while he picks up another trout. It was, Barry, absolutely brilliant. He was brilliant. Like, all game he was brilliant, Ramsdale.
Yeah, it's a funny one because I think Arsenal were well worth their win, but their goalkeeper was man of the match. And that's generally an indication that the other team were the more dominant. And obviously, goalkeeper is as much a part of the team as anyone else. So if he plays well, that his contribution is equally valid. It was a brilliant save. I mean, you keep coming to me to say, that was brilliant, wasn't it? That's very hard to disagree or add. It was brilliant. I was... perhaps, not more impressed, but as impressed by Arsenal's uncharacteristic resilience in the face of an onslaught in the first 20 minutes of the second half, where Leicester threw the kitchen sink at them and their defending was, they were snapping into tackles, defending stoutly. Ramsdale was outstanding, made three or four good saves after the free kick one. And that is perhaps, if I was an Arsenal fan, what I would take from the game. That you would expect them to buckle in the face of that kind of pressure, and they didn't.
Mm. You are an Arsenal fan, Jordan. It's a real fun bit of the podcast for you. We're doing this, and then we're doing West Ham's win at Villa Park.
It's the best
as an Arsenal fan, how are you viewing this? Because that three games in, it was a total crisis. Now you're, 1-5-7, unbeaten since August, just outside the Champions League places.
Well, on the save, first of all, I think I'm the only person that didn't think it was as good as everyone's making it out to be. It's a good save, but it's not in the corner. I think when you look at it, it's one of those camera saves that looks really good on slow mo camera.
I don't know.
It's a good save.
So fast. It's behind him. It's like he's got to.
And the sun is in his eyes. There's a wall of men in front of him, obscuring his view.
I think it's a good save. I don't think it's a save of the season, but that's me being miserable again. So I'll take it. But to your question, I was surprised that Arsenal won that game. I didn't have Arsenal winning that match. It was uncharacteristic, as Barry says there, in terms of they saw the game out, they got a clean sheet, they scored early, they didn't give away any stupid goals. I think it was a really big game for Arsenal, because if Arsenal think that they've got a chance of breaking into that top six, and dare I say it, with United looking poor, even pushing for top four, my deluded self, they had to win that game on the weekend. Leicester were coming into a little bit of form, and to go there and to win that game, I thought was a really, really impressive victory for Arsenal. The kids are playing really well. Saka and Emile Smith Rowe, Lacazette's back in the team, and he's having a presence and an influence on the side there. Ben White is impressing me more and more by each game. Gabriel's asserting himself now. So yeah, it was a team that I was expecting to lose to on the weekend, but one I'm delighted that we didn't.
Aston Villa 1, West Ham 4. Colin says, at what stage do Golden Sullivan sack Moyes or appear in some sort of drugs raid or do something ridiculous? This is all going too well. I'm starting to wonder if I'm in the Matrix. Wilson, they were brilliant again, West Ham. And that fourth goal was just, I applauded from my sofa. It was that good.
Yeah, I mean, it was against a sort of demoralised opposition who down to 10 men and were clearly beaten. But yes, the fact that they had the wherewithal to do that itself is impressive. And they are, I mean, I even after last season, I thought it might be a bit of a flash in the pan for West Ham. But they just seem to be getting better and better. And so, I was wrong about Vieira, I was wrong about Moyes.
Ollie says, JJB, oh yes, the notorious JJB, once said he didn't rate Declan Rice. Is that still the case?
I don't think I actually said that. I think I just said that I didn't rate him as much as everybody else rated him. But
do you rate him as much as everyone else now?
No, but I'm rating him more than I did back then. I still can't put my finger on what it is about Declan Rice, and I'm happy to be schooled on what it is that everybody finds amazing about him. I think that his reading of the game is good. That's a good thing. He's adding goals to his game now. That's a good thing. He seems to have a very good understanding of where to be and protecting the back four, but also kind of he's almost box to box now and getting between both boxes quite regularly now. So I think he's a good player. I didn't think at the Euros he was amazing, and that was kind of where I judged him. I thought we had a good Euros. I was looking for him to show me at the, you know, with England, why everybody thinks he's the second coming. So I don't not like Declan Rice. I think he's a good player. I'm just not in the camp for some reason. But I'm happy to be schooled and told why.
Well, defensively, he's excellent, right? Screens the back four brilliantly. His distribution is excellent. He can beat a man. He can run with the ball. Okay. He's scoring goals. I don't know. What else do you want? What else do you want?
I want more, Max. I want bicycle kicks.
What possibly more could you want from him? I thought that finish, it reminded, it was a sort of Lampard-like finish. It was unspectacular, but still a brilliant goal from like 25 yards.
No, I can see. I think he's got everything. The form he's in, he's looking like a phenomenal player. So I can see that what I'm seeing now is what I think everybody maybe saw 18 months ago. But 18 months ago, when everybody was talking about this now, I didn't see that and the consistency back then. But I'm happy to hold my hands up and say, you know, I did underestimate Declan Rice.
Awesome Wells says, please discuss Ben Johnson and endorse his nickname, The Scribe, in honour of the Renaissance playwright of the same name. That was a lovely moment when he scored nice celebration. So well done to Ben. West Ham have never had more points or scored more goals at this stage in any of their previous Premier League seasons. Meanwhile, the fourth consecutive defeat for Aston Villa. Chris, why did you have to have Jordan on? Haven't my villains suffered enough? I'm waving the white flag. Mitchell, can we mute Jordan Jarrett Bryan, please? We need at least 24 hours to process this loss. Dean Smith doesn't need it either. And Paul says, I genuinely can't believe Dean Smith is getting grief. I mean, I can, is that how it is these days? But surely he has some goodwill. Let's go to Barry.
look, Dean Smith has plenty of credit in the bank, but things haven't been going well for him this season. Jack Grealish left the club. He's changed formation from a 4-3-3 to a 3-5-2. So he's got a surplus of wingers which aren't being used or are being used in the case of Emi Buendia in the wrong position. He's been playing as a number 10 and he's looked lost. They're trying to force Ollie Watkins is used to playing up front on his own, but he's had to play alongside Danny Ings. That hasn't really worked out either. And in this game, Dean Smith switched back to a 4-3-3, had Emi Buendia back in his natural position. He provided the assist for their goal. But then it all went to pot when the red card came out because he had to take Buendia off and shore up midfield. So he's a little unfortunate. I don't think Dean Smith should be sacked, but I wouldn't be hugely surprised if he was sacked because Villa are the fourth, possibly fifth now. Newcastle have been taken over, richest team in the Premier League. Their owners are very ambitious. Their chairman is very ambitious. And I think four defeats in a row, he's definitely under pressure, I'd say. But I would be surprised, simultaneously surprised and unsurprised, were he to lose his job.
Wilson?
Sorry, I was just trying to work out what that would look like, so me being simultaneously surprised and unsurprised. Yeah, I mean, there does seem to be genuine. It sort of crept up on me a bit, the sort of discontent of Villa fans with Dean Smith. I just sort of assumed they were kind of, obviously disappointed with three straight defeats before Sunday, four straight defeats now. but the vehemence of hostility. But then, you know, I saw them away at Spurs, which was the game after they'd won at Old Trafford. And I'd sort of gone there sort of blithe, expecting them to be quite good because they'd just won at Old Trafford. And they were terrible. I mean, genuinely terrible. And there was a lot of talk then, oh, yeah, Nuno's worked it out. I just think it's a crap game of football. And similarly, the Arsenal game on the Friday night, when people go, oh, yeah, Arsenal look really good. I just think Villa are terrible. And I don't quite know what's happened in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks that they've gone from, I mean, maybe winning at Old Trafford just isn't that big a deal anymore. Yeah. But maybe that's the issue. I'm still sort of stuck in the mindset of overrating Manchester United. But I don't know. I sort of instinctively think it's wrong when the response to any little blip of form is sack the manager. The manager only has to get it wrong once and he's sacked. He could have been brilliant for 5 or 6 years and he has a bad sort of 4 or 5 months and that's it. And I guess there are also times when you look at it and you think, it's just over, there's just nothing there, which is sort of how I feel already about Nuno at Tottenham. I can't really see how he gets out of that. People who watch Villa more regularly than me will probably have a better view on Dean Smith than I do. But as an outsider, somebody who doesn't watch them all that closely, all that often, it does surprise me how quickly things have turned against him.
I mean, rebuilding after life after Jack Grealish was always going to be tricky.
It was, but I mean, I thought, as an outsider, I thought the business they did was pretty good. The players they got in and the price they paid for them, given what they were getting for Grealish, I thought it made their squad stronger, and I thought they'd handle that situation much better than Spurs. But maybe you're right. Maybe just working out how you use them is taking longer than it should be.
Ezri Konsa was sent off for a professional foul. I thought it was a red card. Gary Lineker didn't. I thought the Laporte red card was a red card, and I think Johnny Evans should have gone for the Aubameyang foul as well. I thought they were all red cards. Does anybody want to disagree on any of them?
I'm not convinced the Konsa one was a red card for his foul on Jarrod Bowen. I certainly think Courtney Howes should have got a red for elbowing Fornals in the build-up to that move. And I'm wondering if Courtney Howes had got red, would that mean Ezri Konsa wouldn't have? I don't know. Or could both have got sent off? Well,
I think they both could have been sent off, because I think if you play advantage, because, you know, Antonio plays it to Bowen, then Bowen's through, then you take a red card for the professional foul. And then how, Jordan, is Courtney Howes not sent off for what is, I mean, bad in wrestling? Like, it was extraordinary.
Yeah, I was surprised about that as well. I think they could have and should have both been sent off, actually, in that scenario. It would have been a bit of a first, I imagine, for the Premier League, but I think they were both worthy of going.
I do want to mention Marvellous Nakamba's rolling around. It was absolutely absolutely brilliant. Like, what are you do? Anybody who has fallen over and it's hurt knows that you don't do that. Like it's not just, have you played the game? It's like, have you ever fallen over? And everybody has fallen over.
You don't know how he feels, Max. You don't know how he feels. Maybe the feeling took him to 17 rolls. You don't know how he feels.
It was like one of those, those sort of, preachers who, you know, fly around on private jets, and occasionally they film everyone having like a sort of out of body? Is it an exorcism? What is it? I don't know what it is. But, you know, and then everybody's just sort of suddenly the crowd or the audience or the congregation start all just, you know, having this weird out of body experience. That's what happened to Marvellous Nakamba. Anyway, you can tell I don't watch a lot of those preachers. That's my lack of real.
I went to, I think it's the first piece I ever wrote for the Guardian. I went to Taribo West's birthday at the church he ran in Milan. And I'd sort of got the wrong idea of what it was. It turned out to be a 6-hour evangelical church service, which is, I'll be honest, was a disappointment. But there were exorcisms performed during that service, which was remarkable to witness.
Yeah. Was there a half time? Like, could you leave? 6 hours is quite long.
I mean, obviously you could have left. They didn't lock the doors, but because it was his birthday, he got back the preacher from Nigeria who converted him. So that was quite interesting. And then at the end, there was sort of warm Fanta and chicken and rice.
What was your favorite hour?
Well, the first.
Do they put a board up at the end? At the end, like just 2 minutes left, they go 24 minutes injury time. You're like, oh, so I can't be at Taribo Best's birthday party any longer.
I was taking a lot of notes and taking a lot of photos early on. And then as it got into like hour five, I was like, like, this is just not, never going to happen. Have I entered purgatory? Is this kind of? You can find the piece on the website. It was early 2002.
Who commissioned that? Did you say I'm going to Taribo West's birthday party? Can I write a piece about it?
Yeah, because seeing them in Nigeria's group at the World Cup.
All right. Did that give you any insight into that goalless draw?
Well, no, it gave me a lot of... I mean, that goalless draw was significantly less boring than that church service. Famously one of the worst games of World Cup history, but still, for me, better than...
mercifully short.
At least you've been to Taribo West's birthday party, and I never have.
Did you bring him a gift?
No.
Did you get a leaving... Did you get a little goodie bag?
No, I mean, I got a can of Fanta. But I drank that at the time.
Surely you want something a bit stronger than Fanta. Surely, you know, you hang around at a wedding and you're like, hope they bring their drinks out.
I was actually on my way to Slovenia. I was in Trieste. I'd flown to Trieste and we were about to get a bus to Slovenia with some mates. And I suddenly got a phone call from Taribo, who I'd met at the Cup of Nations over that year. And he said, I've got that preacher in at the weekend. Do you want to come to my church in Milan? I was in Venice already. So I was like, yeah, I'll just get a train to Venice. And from Venice to Milan. So my mates stayed in Venice, went to meet them afterwards. And it was all very ad hoc. So yeah, I probably would have had a gift. I've been coming from London, but I wasn't. I was in Trieste.
Oh, fair enough. There we go. That'll do for part two. Part three, round up the rest of the Premier League and any other business. Part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Norwich won Leeds 2, then huge win at the bottom of the table for Leeds United. Norwich remain winless with just 2 points from 10 games. All three goals scored in the space of 4 minutes and 21 seconds in the second half. A few stats about Norwich. They've scored just 3 this season. They're conceding a rate of 2.5 goals a game. They've not scored in more than one goal in 28 consecutive Premier League matches, albeit, you know, a season apart. Their goal difference of minus 21 is the joint worst record at this stage of the Premier League season. Lee says, is it safe to assume Norwich City's first Premier League victory this season will come against, quote, an underpass Spurs side in a month's time? It's got all the chances, but...
Well, all I'd say is, you know when Derby had their 11-point season, do you know who the only team they beat that season was?
No.
Newcastle United.
Was it?
Oh, so that's coming up. Well, is that later this month, I think, that game?
That is quite soon, yeah. That'd be a fascinating game, won't it? But I think Leeds probably deserved that win, Baz.
They did. It wasn't a particularly good game. The first half was very unmemorable. Leeds had Calvin Phillips and Rafinha back, and they're a class above anything else on the pitch, I think. The highlight for me of this game was Rafinha at one point trying to keep the ball in play over at the touchline by the technical area, and he clattered into Marcelo Bielsa, absolutely flattened him. And there was a look of genuine horror on his face as he helped this, you know, quite elderly man back to his feet. And it was like, uh-oh, what have I done here? I really hope I haven't hurt him. But, good win for Leeds, and they were the better team.
Burnley 3, Brentford 1. Burnley's first win of the season on Sean Dyche's 9th anniversary in charge of the club. The fans have been patient and stood by us. They know it's a challenge for us, but we've got all noses pointing in the right direction. Which is a good phrase, isn't it? From this game, Jordan, Chris Wood's finish was brilliant, wasn't it? And Maxwell Cornet's a nice footballer.
I like Chris Wood. I've always liked him. He's one of those really basic forwards that does what he does. You know you're going to get 10 Premier League goals out of him a season. Hits the ball really well. And yeah, it was a really good goal. I still can't quite work out how Burnley got Cornell. That's really confusing me as to how they got him. So many other bigger and, if you like, more glamorous clubs needing a forward, you know, and he's gone there. Unless he's using Burnley as a stepping stone to another level somewhere else across Europe in the next season or two, I don't know. But no, they've done well to get him. He started really well.
And the other game, Watford nil, Southampton 1. 20 consecutive matches without a clean sheet in the Premier League for Watford. Wolves play Everton tonight. AOB then, quick word on Sergio Aguero. He reported chest discomfort during Barcelona's 1-1 draw with Alaves, has been admitted to hospital for a cardiac exam and been diagnosed with arrhythmia, according to reports in Spain. Obviously, we wish him all the best. Simon says, can someone explain what happened at Leyton Orient, where the ref forgot to play injury time, so they played it after half time, then swapped ends and played the second half? You have done it, Simon. And it was very funny. Alan Young was the referee. And look, fair play to Alan Young for noticing his mistake and rectifying it rather than just sort of sweeping it under the carpet. Here's an email to finish from Owen Lynn. One July afternoon on the eve of the Euro final, myself and two Irish friends were lazily walking around South London. Having been denied entry from a rather famous British pub chain close by, we Googled surrounding bars and set off to find a new watering hole. As luck would have it, we stumbled into a lovely quaint establishment in which none other than Mr. Glendenning was sitting, swilling his multiple carling pints among friends. We sat down to enjoy our drinks, and eventually, after a beer or two, we worked up the courage to say hello and ask for a photo outside. Baz was absolutely lovely and more than obliging. As we got ready to take the photo, a small dog materialized, seemingly from nowhere, most likely attracted by Barry's raw charisma. Baz, with Dr. Doolittle-esque charm, immediately bent down, scooped the dog up into his arms and cradled it for the photo, causing the dog to remain still and pose perfectly for the camera. Not only did he take a picture with a presumably random canine and three fans, but then he bought us all Sambuca shots before we left. These were obviously disgusting, but the gesture was heartwarming and greatly appreciated. If we ever have the good fortune and pleasure to stumble upon each other again, we will surely return the favour with free alcohol and loads of fags. Please find photo attached. Owen, Luke and Niall. So there you are, Barry, looking very happy with your dog.
Is it a Cocker Spaniel?
I don't know. I've known nothing about dogs. Is that a Cocker Spaniel? Waiting for someone? Hello? Maybe.
What color is it?
It's a white dog with like curly hair and floppy ears.
Oh, yeah, that's Norman.
David Gower?
It's David Gower.
I have two friends from Sunderland named Jonathan. That dog is Norman and belongs to the one of them that isn't Jonathan Wilson.
Adam says, did Barry eat his out-of-date yogurt? If so, is he okay?
I didn't. I decided not to risk it. It's 12 days out-of-date yogurt. But then it's yogurt, so does yogurt ever go out of date? I don't know. Isn't the whole point of yogurt that it's out of date dairy product?
I think they want us to finish the podcast, so I won't I won't go on a journey down. Can yogurt go off? I think the answer is yes, but you know.
I've had yogurt that's got this sort of very bright pink mold on it, and that's always slightly scared me.
I think so. Yes, Jordan?
I think Nuno's just been sacked.
Oh, you're serious.
Are you serious?
Sammy Mockbell's just reporting.
If only we hadn't talked about yogurt, we'd have been off air. If we hadn't had that and Taribo West's birthday, then we wouldn't have to talk about Nuno being sacked. Okay, so then as Jordan just broke the mail of reporting that Nuno has been sacked, it's not a surprise, is it? Like, we expected it. Amazing that it's happened before we stopped recording, but that is probably our own fault for talking for too long. As you said, Wilson, how long do you want this pod to be? Longer than a Taribo West birthday party. Wilson, your reaction to the breaking news?
I think he was given, he's put in an impossible position given the, he was undermined by the fact everybody knew he was nowhere near first choice. I think somebody with a more ebullient personality may have been able to get through that, but he's a quietly intelligent man. And so it felt he was never sort of fighting back against those perceptions. So I don't even blame him for this. I think any club that sacks a manager after 10 league games in charge, it's the appointment that's wrong, not necessarily the manager. And so that then calls into question Paratici. He's made one big decision. And that he's already admitted he's got it wrong. So I would suggest he might be on quite thin ice now as well.
I think just briefly, my brief reaction is that the story will obviously focus on Spurs and who they get now and all that sort of stuff. But I think Jonathan's right to mention Nuno Espirito Santo because it's not gone well, albeit not his fault at Spurs. It ended poorly at Wolves for him as well. So kind of where is he in terms of his next job and what level a club, do you know what I mean? We'll start looking now at him. I'm interested to see where his career kind of goes next.
The Spurs job is available.
Conte doesn't seem like Conte would go there. I mean, I don't know what you think, Wilson.
I think he might go with significant guarantees of transfer funds. But I suspect they're not going to be available because, I mean, Spurs had to take out that emergency loan from Bank of England. Was that earlier this year? Now, obviously, the pandemic caused all kinds of short-term cash flow issues. So I'm not saying that there's necessarily a massive financial crisis at Spurs, but equally they're not flush with cash. They can't suddenly go out and spend £300 or £400 million on players. So, I mean, Conte's in a great position at the minute, right? He can talk to Manchester United. He can talk to Tottenham. He can talk to
Newcastle.
I mean, Newcastle, yeah.
What about Potter? Like that would be and if you said to Graham Potter, look, you've got it and you've got it for, like, give him the time, because if Spurs finish 10th but you've got a manager who's trying to play football the right way and you've seen it, I think the fans would probably accept that.
The thing with Potter though, Max, is that he's in a great position at Brighton because he is an owner who backs him to the hilt and has complete faith in him, and Daniel Levy doesn't seem to do that with any manager. It's all about him. So would Tottenham be that enticing a proposition when bigger clubs may become available in time?
I don't know. Anyway, it happened. We managed to cover it. That's good. We'll cover it in more detail, I presume, in one of the pods on Wednesday or Thursday when the Champions League's back. But for the meantime, thank you, Jordan.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Wilson.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Back on Wednesday.
This is The Guardian.